Those are the days that I was listening to WTRY and WPTR, watching television on WRGB and singing on WRGB. This is 1955 to 1960.
And what did that do for your music outlook? And is that when you knew you wanted to be a musician?
You know, I knew I wanted to sing, but I didn't know I wanted to be a musician until I moved back to the New York area and started going into Greenwich Village and especially the Gaslight Cafe and listening to Dave Van Ronk. And that made me decide that I wanted to learn how to play guitar. And I wound up taking lessons from Dave.
And you also took lessons from the Reverend Gary Davis, which must have been something.
And with Reverend Davis, I had to go up to the South Bronx, and I took just a few lessons with Reverend Davis. It was hard to tell. Dave was like a totally different style, and Reverend Davis, it was hard to, I basically just had a, there was no tablature, and I had to watch his fingers, and Reverend Davis had very like thick fingers, and it was sort of difficult for me to pick up some of the things. He also used finger picks, which I never really got used to.
And from the folk and jug band, you went to Blues Project, which is kind of a shift in direction to go from the folk and the jug over to a blues band.
Well, I think that's what everybody in all of us kids around the Greenwich Village in the early 60s who were folkies, we wound up, you know, playing jug band music, the blues people, which I was one of, and then there were the bluegrass old-timey people, and we wound up playing jug band music together. But then, you know, Dylan played electric at the Newport Folk Festival, and people started picking up electric guitars. In fact, John Sebastian was in the Even Dozen Jug Band with me, and I guess John was one of the first people to pick up an electric guitar in the village and put together a group.
And from that, from after the Blues Project, you got together with some friends and formed a group called Blood, Sweat, and Tears, perhaps one of the most commercially successful bands of the late 60s and into the mid-70s. How did that all come together, and what are your memories of that time?
Well, the Blues Project was a crazy psychedelic blues band. And when we broke up, we broke up after a couple, 2.5 years. One of the guys who was in it with me, Al Cooper, and I decided to put a band. We wanted to put a band together. Al had a bunch of songs, and we had a concept of wanting to put horns. Al wanted to put horns into the Blues Project, but another member who was the leader of the band didn't want that. But I wanted to put horns into a band, and Al wanted to do the same thing. And he was going to England, and he didn't wind up in England. He wound up staying in New York, and we said, let's put a band together. So we hired some, you know, through somebody who knew somebody, we hired some horn players, and the personalities were just fabulous, and the music that we all knew that was synthesized together was just great. I mean, Randy Brecker was in the band, and some great musicians, and Fred Lipsius, who wrote some of the most beautiful charts and played beautiful sax and piano, really talented people, and we I guess we had something.
Now you're gone, girl, and the lampposts call your name. I can hear them in the spring of frozen rain. Now you're gone, girl, and the time slow down till dawn. It's a cold.
Our first album, which I think is really probably our best album because it's the most fun, was recorded in like 2 weeks, recorded and mixed.
But after the first album, Al Cooper left, and oddly enough, Columbia Records was not too thrilled about Blood, Sweat, and Tears without Al Cooper, but they reluctantly went along, and I guess it was a good decision.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Columbia Records was not thrilled when Al left, and we held auditions, and Bobby Columbia and I, who were running the band at the time after Al left, went to Clive Davis at our record company and said, you know, hang in there with us. You know, we're going to get a better singer. That's really what we needed. And, you know, we had auditions and hired David Clayton Thomas, who was just incredible at that time before, you know, before he started, like, getting a little bit syrupy. And Clive came down and agreed, you know, band sounds great, let's do it. So we recorded like one of the biggest selling albums in history.
And after that, there was American Flyer, which commercially perhaps wasn't as well known. What are your memories of the mid to late 70s as you explored all different types of music? You've really sort of been a restless musician. Just about every type, every genre of music has been part of your repertoire.
Sleep, little girl. You're a candle in a cold, cold world.
I know, it's actually been very confusing for me because I started out with a jug band, wound up in a psychedelic blues band, went on to a jazz rock band, and the last band I was... Oh, and then, of course, I produced The Godfather of Punk, and then wound up in a country rock band. So I'm still trying to figure out what I was doing.
I need your body close to mine. And friends for life ain't easy to
You mentioned
find.
Lou Reed. You did produce two of his albums. What do you think about being a producer, being on the other side of the glass?
Oh, I loved it. One of the reasons why I left BS&T was because I was getting friendly with Lou, and I really wanted to work more in the studio, which I did. I really had a lot more fun, a lot more control of the music I was working with.
And I feel just like Jesus' son. And I guess I just don't know. And I guess that I just don't know.
Actually, the most fun I'm having now is playing solo. So, you know, when you play solo, you can stick an extra bar in your music, and nobody's going to turn and look at you and start yelling. You know, hey, what did you just threw the whole band off? Fantastic.
And from the studio, you also became an A&R man, which is the office side of the record company. What does an A&R man do for those of us who may not be too sure? You try to find talent and bring it up.
Yeah, it's called Artists and Repertoire, and I became a vice president of Mercury Records for a while, mainly post-divorce, and I wanted to see what the other side of the business was like. So what you do is you sign acts and you negotiate basic contracts, and sometimes you go into the studio, which is what I tried to do with Mercury, and I did it with an Irish band called Horselips for three albums. But it's mainly you are the guy, you're the contact on the street, and you're the guy that has to listen to all these tapes and figure out what you like. Unfortunately, in those days when I was an A&R man, I was getting all these disco tapes with, you know, like 12-minute conga solos and stuff like that. So I was trying to get back into the studio as fast as possible.
And I know Decca Records turned down the Beatles, and I guess as an A&R man, you made a mistake that you probably like to take back.
I turned down U2. Well, that was when I was producing Horselips, and the Horselips were the mentors of U2, and U2 was being managed. They were kids then. They were being managed by my old friend Paul McGinnis, who's still managing them. And you know, they would come to the studio and watch the sessions, and Paul would give me demo tapes, and they weren't very good. So I'm the guy that turned down U2.
So what are you doing now? You're going to be at the Linda. This is sort of a musical memoir, a sort of a retrospective of your many years in music, a little bit of everything along the way?
It's sort of like my performance is designed to go along with my memoirs, which I'm in the process of writing and will be on a publishing. Actually, we're going to contract this week. And it's basically, I do it in chronological order, from before the jug band. When I was first learning from Van Ronk and some of my roots, and then into the jug band and on through American Flyer with a bunch of stories and stuff like that.
So what comes next? You've done so much in the music business, in the industry, all sides of it. What are you looking forward to now?
Well, I really love writing. I love writing my book. I think it's very special, actually, in that it's not so much I did this and I did that. It's sort of like a standing outside the music business and looking in, you know, from all of these years. I really love writing, and I love playing acoustic guitar, and so that's what I plan to do in, you know, in how many years I have left. You know, so this is what I enjoy.